This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Mr. Robert Prechter, and he writes the Elliott Wave Theory. Is that a newsletter, Mr. Prechter?
Well, we've got quite a few services, but the one that I write each month is called the Elliott Wave Theorist.
All right, fine. And of course, we are seeing some strange things happen in the stock market. Certainly, the stock market has been dropping. And then here in the last few days, why, it's just been zooming up again. Are we at the bottom of the market, or is this simply a pre-election a recovery that, of course, to keep people's minds off the economy until after the election?
Well, I don't really think the rally is engineered, but it's definitely not the bottom of the market. At least in my work, this is a bear market rally. We've probably had half a dozen already in the last 2.5 years since the all-time high. There's every indication that this bottom was not a major low. So this means this rally, and I'm glad we're talking during a rally, is another selling opportunity for people who've been trapped and want a chance to get out.
All right, fine. So you think that then this is sort of just a mild response, and it'll be turning around and going down again?
Well, there's no telling if it'll be mild. Usually bear market rallies are violent. They are exciting. They convince people that the low is in. We've had probably a record number of buy signals from fundamental analysts, technical analysts, and all types of people who follow the market. I don't believe they are valid. We certainly could have a rally to 890 on the S&P, maybe even 990 on the S&P, but it's going to be temporary. It's a great selling opportunity, and I know we've got some time today, so we can talk about some of the reasons why it was not a major low a week ago.
All right. Why wasn't it a major low?
Well, there are three things that a true bear market bottom will give you. One of them is decent value. Now, if you value stocks in terms of dividend payout, in terms of the earnings that the companies have, or in terms of the book value, the liquidation value of the companies, despite the fact that the stock market is down 50% on average from the highs of 2.5 years ago, these valuations are nowhere near where they're supposed to be at a bottom, where they typically are at a bottom. In fact, they're still above where they were at all of the important stock market tops of the 20th century, and that's saying quite a bit.
Now,
value is nowhere to be found.
Now, how can you tell when there's value? In other words, does it have to do with the price-earnings ratio? Does it have to do with the actual value of the company? How can the average individual out here who doesn't understand all these fancy charts really evaluate the stock market as a professional would?
Well, the average individual has some difficulty in doing that because just as any professional, whether you're a surgeon or a radio talk show host or a stock market analyst, you've got to do a whole lot of work and a lot of studying of history and to really understand what you're doing. And I think that the people who paraded across the television pretty nonchalantly in the late 90s and told the public they should be risking their hard-saved money in a very risky place called the stock market, I think did them a great disservice. But be that as it may, and the average person, if he takes a few hours to study history, and that's why in the first half of this book, Conquer the Crash, I lay out 300 years of stock market history in several charts. And they're not hard to understand because it's really a picture of what's happened. And it gives you a really panoramic view of the waves and cycles that stock prices go through. And when you get a good look at that, you can see where we have been at the pinnacle of one of those big waves. It's clearly time to come down. But there are other measures of valuation. We can talk about those as well if you've got the time.
Yeah, we certainly do. And what about this Kondraty cycle? I think that's the term. It may be is that really what we're talking about?
No, but that's a fascinating subject in and of itself. The Kondratieff cycle, named after a Russian economist from the 1920s who was sent to Siberia because the poor guy discovered that there seemed to be a self-renewing cycle in capitalist economies. And it's interesting you bring that up. I use that as a peripheral tool. Joseph Schumpeter of Harvard back in the 1930s said that this was the single best economic forecasting tool there was. I think it's the second best. I think Elliott wave patterns are more useful, but this is one darn good cycle. And it says that societies tend to go through these cycles of exuberance, growth, and inflation in the first half, and then speculative manias and collapses in the second half. And we've certainly had the growth half in the 1950s and 60s, and then we've had the speculative mania in the 80s and 90s, and now we're in the collapse portion of the cycle.
All right, fine. And, of course, is this sort of what the Elliott wave is all about?
No, it's completely different. The wave principle is really a discovery from about 60 years ago that the stock market prices are a fractal. And all that means, it's a technical term, but what it means is that the patterns that occur on a very short-term basis are the same ones that occur on intermediate and a long-term basis. The smaller patterns link together to form versions of the larger ones. So what R.N. Elliott said was, I must be viewing a really fundamental tenet of crowd behavior because people seem to be creating the same price patterns at all degrees of scale. And I think he's right. I think what he found was evidence of human herding. People listen to their buddies, they watch the tape, and it's all information that everyone else is receiving, and they tend to ebb and flow to get optimistic and pessimistic in the group. And so when they do that, it's not a straight line. The market's never going in a straight line. But it goes through stages, you know, the initial concern and then finally a capitulation to better prices and finally the wild mania at the top. And there are pauses along the way. And so what he said is follow those patterns and you'll have a good handle on where we are.
And, of course, somebody once said when the last bear becomes a bull, then you know it, you're at the top of the bull
market. Well, I have to admit that I thought that happened somewhere in the mid-90s. I was amazed that the market kept going after 1995 and doubled yet again. I thought at that point the mania was so thick that we'd drawn in every last bull, every last possible bull. But that wasn't true. There were more to come. And the easing in credit that the Federal Reserve helped helped along throughout the 80s and 90s was goosed even harder in the latter half of the 90s, and I think that contributed to the final blow-off when virtually every family in America had money in the stock market.
All right, we're going to have to take a quick break here right now, and our guest is Mr. Robert Prechter, and we'll tell you how to get in touch with him and get his book here very shortly. But right now, of course, I want to mention that if you're sort of run down and you feel like you need additional energy, let me suggest to you the Be Alive Royal Jelly products. I personally have taken them for 10 years now. Ordinarily, when you listen to a program and the person says, oh, gee, this is great, I've always used it, you know very well he's not telling the truth. But in this instance, it really is true. In fact, we have used it. My wife has used it and got me on it. And we tried stopping it at one time, and we just didn't feel quite so well. We went back on the products, and we've been very happy with them. And, of course, the company, Be Alive Royal Jelly, actually contacted us and said, could we sponsor you for a month? So I said, sure. We always need help as far as what we're doing. So if you'd like to know more about this product, which is the Royal Jelly that the Queen Bee eats, give a call to 1-866-233-7500. That's 1-866-233-7500. Just talk to the people there. It's sold with a money-back guarantee, so you're not going to lose, and I think you'll be very, very, very happy. And then, of course, I want to mention the program we're going to put on all day long out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 23rd of November. That's the weekend before Thanksgiving. The 23rd of November, we're going to have speakers Joan Parris, Jeannie Soderman, Bill Sardi, who's a regular here, Brad Dacus. I'm going to be talking, and we want to get you to understand, I believe we're moving into some very, very difficult times, and how are you going to prepare yourself and your family for what lies ahead, physically, psychologically, financially? Well, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's going to be an all day long. There's going to be a luncheon. There's going to be a syllabus that starts at 8:45, goes to 5, and we hope that you'll be there. Give us a call right now. This is a fascinating four-tape set, Genocide. And one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America, the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest is Mr. Robert Frechter. Is it Dr. Robert Frechter or Robert Frechter?
Oh, no. I got out of college as soon as I graduated.
All right, fine. All right. Somebody had referred to the lady who was scheduling us. I thought she dropped a doctorate in there. You know, the doctorate really doesn't make any difference one way or the other. It's what you know, not necessarily the degrees that you have, that's all important. But anyway, of course, you're talking about what's happening to the stock market. And, you know, of course, stock advisor was a bear right up until the very end. And I said, you know, this is not the time to go in. Oh, yes, it is. You know, this is going to go up to, you know, 20,000 or something. You know, and of course,
oh, my gosh.
Anyway.
I know one other guy, and I won't mention his name because I have a lot of respect for him, but he wrote a couple of incredibly bearish books 10 years ago, and finally in 1999, he capitulated.
He became a bull.
I guess it is a new era, after all.
Right, this is a new economy. Do you remember that, the new economy, certainly the high-tech economy? This is entirely different. The NASDAQ isn't governed by the same rules as the regular stock market. And, you know, when I heard people talking like that, I knew we were in real trouble.
Oh, so, listen, I hope you get a chance to read chapter one of my book, because the whole theme of that chapter is showing the truth behind that ridiculous phrase, the new economy.
Right.
In fact, there were two other times in the past 100 years when this type of phrase was used, and it was in the 1920s when they called it a new era, and in the 1980s in Japan when they said we have a miracle economy in Japan. And all three instances, and this is fascinating, they called it a new era, but number one, the only place that there was real excitement was the stock market. Number two, when you explore the actual strength of the economy, you find that it was a period that was actually very lackluster. In the 1990s, for example, we grew at about a 3.5% rate on average, 80s and 90s, whereas in the 1950s and 60s, we grew at a 4.5% rate on average. In Japan, in the 50s and 60s, they grew at a 9% rate, and in the big vaunted 1980s mania, they only grew at about a 4% rate, less than half. Same thing happened in the 1920s compared to a period about 15 years prior. So it's funny, the economy actually was, even though it was rising, was slowing down on a very long-term basis. So it was not a new economy at all.
Well, now, of course, everybody thinks, well, we're going to go down, we're going to hit a floor, and we're going to bounce back again. But, of course, we've exported so much of our industrial base to third world countries. And now, of course, the really exciting country is communist China that has so many of our industries. Try and buy anything at Walmart that isn't made in communist China. Try to get textiles that aren't manufactured elsewhere. Really, of course, America is becoming increasingly a service-directed society. And, of course, we can only serve one another so long, and we cannot continue to spend ourselves into prosperity. When are we going to hit the bottom? And when we hit the bottom, are we going to bounce back as we have in the past, or is this a new society we're living in without an industrial base?
Well, those are some far-reaching questions. Do you recall, when, at least when I was young, we would get things made that weren't too made very well, but they were ubiquitous, all made in Japan. And pretty soon, 10 years went by, and they got better and better, and pretty soon they made the best products anywhere. And they enjoyed a real renaissance in a decade that was all their own in the 1980s. Well, I think China's on a similar path with a very big difference. China's also got a big army, and they have a couple of billion people. They're a much larger economy. And perhaps just as important, they went through a serious political setback, one of the greatest in history, when they bottomed out in 1979 with the Cultural Revolution, and they were driving all their best minds into the countryside, and people were dying left and right, thanks to Mao's regime. Well, unlike the Soviet Union, I think the Chinese, many of the everyday Chinese, actually believed in communism deeply, and I think that that pendulum swung so far to the left that there will be no returning. Now, that's not to say they won't have a difficult decade, and I think they will. It's going to be what I call a wave two, a deep retracement, a test of the bottom. But it looks to me as if you're really a speculator looking toward the coming century, you want to be buying Chinese stocks whenever that place looks as if it's going to be in tough shape, probably will be in sometime this decade. That's the speculation that's coming. I think America's had its two centuries. And even though we're kings of the world now, most of our trend is going to be down.
What about Europe? What about European stocks? What about the euro replacing the dollar as the reserve currency of the world? Or should be we be getting a Chinese currency as the major currency of the world?
Yeah, I think Europe, forget it, because they're way behind the United States. Their glory days were a couple of hundred years ago. In fact, going back to some of the countries, it was 300 years ago or 400 years ago when you go back to Spain. So I think Europe remains in eclipse, and it's the Far East that's actually emerging from their own dark ages. So if you're really a global viewer, then I think you have to have that opinion. I don't think the euro has a chance at all. Western Europe, which is a sad thing, is more socialist than the United States is, and there's no indication at all that they're going to repeal any of that. So the U.S. is following in its footsteps. We're getting more centralized, more socialistic all the time. Now we're getting militaristic, which is extremely dangerous. That's what England did just before it lost, its sun never sets status. So, the cycles of history play out. We're getting far afield from where the stock market is going and what you should do, but it is rather interesting.
Well, I know it was Napoleon who said, let China sleep, or when China awakens, the world will tremble. And, of course, the greatest mistake our leaders ever made was to try to build up the economy of communist China, because they're industrious people, and, of course, they have a dependable workforce. I mean, if you don't do the right thing, it's off to the camp. So, they have good quality control. Well, what should people be doing now? If you were a person, and we get these calls all the time from our listeners, and they've lost all their money has been in the stock market and a trust fund or something. It's lost half of its value. What should they do now? Should they stick it out, waiting for it to come back? Should they get out? Should they go into gold and silver? Should they go into short-term treasury bills? What should people be doing?
Well, first thing they should do is stop listening to the optimists, so-called optimists. That's what they're called anyway, but really the right word is bulls. A lot of people find it just second nature to be bullish all the time. Prices are always going to rise, and that's fine, for 15 years in a true bull market. But after you round the top, it's suicidal, it's homicidal to tell people this. You know, in the 1930s, people jumped out of windows. They ended up losing jobs, homes, all of their possessions, and had to trek 1,000 miles to find a job. This is the kind of thing that the people who are bullish at the wrong time can do to people. So the first thing to do is start thinking for yourself. Right in the introduction to Conquer the Crash, I say, look, here's evidence. I'm not going to try to convince you. I'm going to show you some stuff you need to know. But after that, it's your decision.
All right. How can people get your book?
Oh, well, they can get it at any bookstore or on Amazon. Or if they'd like to take a shortcut and get it for the cheapest possible price and have support along the way for 2 more years, we offer it on the website along with some goodies, and that's ElliottWave.com.
ElliottWave.com, all right. And now, of course, we see that Warren Buffett, at least we read in the paper, that Warren Buffett is thinking of getting in the market because he thinks there's some very, very good buys. And certainly Warren Buffett is, supposedly the second wealthiest man in the world. Is Warren Buffett really going into the market, believing this is the bottom, or is he just shopping as he always does for quality?
Well, Warren Buffett's portfolio is so large, like John Templeton's, that they really just can't get out of everything they have. So they look for times of relative bargains. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he were doing some buying here, but I also think as soon as the S&P rallies 150, 200 points, he's probably going to do some selling. This guy is very savvy. He's been around, and he knows short-term and intermediate-term extremes as well as long-term extremes. But I think if you asked him, do you think this is the major bottom, the end of the bear market, I think he'd say, I don't think so. And one of the reasons is the value we talked about. But the other big reason, and I want to spend some time on this if we can, is the missing psychology.
All right, fine. And well, fortunately, nobody tells us what to do with the program except the clock. And so we've got about a minute before we go to the next break. Well, you want to cover a little bit about the psychology?
Well, yes. I think that this is the missing ingredient, because your opening question in the top of the show was, did we see a major bottom? Every major bottom in history has been accompanied by capitulation, worry, bearishness, pessimism, and all of those things. We keep a lot of indicators, and not one of them showed it. And when we come back after your break, we can talk about some of those.
And really, I think that what people have to understand is everything is perception. How you feel about it. When everybody is optimistic, then you should be concerned. When everybody is pessimistic, when people are losing their homes, when people feel that the system, the economic system, has failed, that would be a good time to be seriously considering about buying. Would that be a fair statement?
That's not only a fair statement. I think that contains most of the wisdom you need to know about investing, and I'd love to talk about that some more, too.
And are you acquainted with Humphrey Neal's The Art of Contrary Thinking?
Sure.
Okay, fine. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Mr. Robert Prechter, and, of course, we'll be glad to take your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But right now, of course, let me just talk to you about some of the items that we carry here at Radio Liberty, and one of them is Miracle 2 soap products. And we can't make any medical claims for Miracle 2 products, but we can tell you that a lot of our listeners do, and whether they have rashes or heartburn or other things, all we can do is suggest you try it, and if it helps you, wonderful. We're not making any claims, but I will tell you, we've used the product now for well over a year, and we're very, very happy with it. It's a soap, a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizer. And if you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. And then, of course, we carry the Phenopoly, which is a set. It's a reading program. If you have children in a government school, I had a gentleman call me today. He's 62 years old, and he has difficulty pronouncing words and spelling words, and he's going back to college. Now he's retired, and he's having the greatest time with his Phenopoly, but one of the tapes there broke, so we're replacing the tape for him, and the audio tapes and the cards. And it's a game played like Monopoly. You will learn the 40 sounds of the English language. You'll learn to sound out words, and it will really give you an advantage. It's Phonicsopoly. Most of these programs are $300 or $400. This one's $139.95. It's actually 5 board games, 2 bonus games, and we throw in 2 books with it. And then, of course, we have the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum that'll take you from your children, from our grandchildren, from kindergarten to graduation from high school for $199.95. Nothing quite like it out there. And, of course, the Complete British Encyclopedia Britannica, 1911 is there. And that's before they started rewriting history and rewriting facts. Call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for Phenopoly, for the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. You owe it to your children to make sure they have an education. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 gripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians. They still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to
antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, the rules of engagement, is currently unavailable to regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Mr. Robert Prechter. His book is Conquering the Crash, and do you want to give that telephone number just one more time?
Well, I suggest people go to the website, ElliottWave.com, but they're welcome to call us. That's 800-336-1618.
All right, fine. And that's 877. Oh, give it one more time, please.
It's 800.
Right.
And then 336-1618.
Okay, fine. And if you have a question or comment, right now, if you'd like to talk to Mr. Prechter, of course, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, you think we've got a way to go. Some people say we're going to go to 5,000. Some people say we're going to go to 4 or 3. You're going to have to wait and see what the psychology is to determine how low we're going to go?
Well, I think we're going a lot lower than any of those numbers, but I have a radical opinion, and it's based on studying all of the manias going back to the tulip mania, all the way up to the Mississippi scheme, the South Sea bubble, the 1920s, and what happened in Japan in the 80s. You notice Japan is down over 80% now.
Right.
Well, I mean, why in the world should the mania that the U.S. experienced in the 1980s and 90s be any different from the ones that have occurred for the last 400 years? I don't think it's going to be any different. That means the whole thing is going to be retraced.
I have a feeling that things always go higher than we anticipate, and then they always go lower than we anticipate. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely, because if people are anticipating something, it means that can't be exactly what's going to happen by definition in the stock market.
All right. Now, what about gold and silver at this time? Is there any place for investing in that at this time?
Well, I think gold and silver are the only real money, so I think people should always have some in their portfolio. It's important. Certain times, it's crucial, such as in the early 70s when the inflationary trend took off. But right now, I think we're in a deflationary trend, and so it's unlikely that gold and silver are going to go to the moon like a lot of people are saying. We called for a bear market rally a year and a half ago, and gold was about 270, and we said it should be a maximum of about 360 on this rally. Well, so far it's gotten under $330 an ounce. It could go a little higher, but a lot of people are bullish on it now. They hated gold a year and a half ago. Now people are talking it up. So psychologically, it seems to me that it's had most of its rally. Also, when you study, say, the 1930s, you'll find that there was a sharp rally in silver at that time in 1931, people again remembering the inflationary times of the teens. But before the whole deflation was over, silver was making a new low, and it finally bottomed in December 1932. So I think it's, again, I'd rather trust history in this case, but I also tell people, look, gold is legal to own right now. It won't hurt to have some. It's certainly seen most of its bear market, whereas the stocks in general, real estate in general, junk bonds, municipal bonds, and corporates are only beginning their bear markets. You don't want to touch those with a 10-foot pole.
Well, then, if you had money, where would you put it right now?
Well, the safest place, you need some of it in gold and silver, and I think 10 or 15% is fine, but for the most part, what you want to do to survive a deflationary period is to have your money in cash equivalents that will survive.
All
now,
right.
That's not so easy to find.
Well, of course, you know, we see what's happened to the people in Argentina. They lost 70% of the value of their money. In Brazil, they've lost 40% of the value of their money. Are we going to see something similar, or are we going to be able to escape the problems that other countries that have acted irresponsibly have?
No, we've been totally irresponsible. But we have a free-floating currency. Argentina's currency was pegged to the dollar, so it wasn't free-floating. Our damage has already shown up in the fact that the dollar's lost 93% of its value since 1913 when we created the Federal Reserve. So that destruction has already occurred in the massive explosion in credit that we've experienced, particularly in the last 20 years. Now, in a deflation, what happens is the total volume of money in credit, and in this case most of it will be in the credit area, is going to shrink. That means the surviving dollars are going to be worth more in terms of goods and services. I don't know about in terms of other currencies, but in terms of goods and services, they'll be worth more. The key, though, is how do you find dollars that survive? I think banks are going to go under, many of the weaker banks. I think a lot of debt instruments that people think are safe are going to disappear. They're going to default. That means companies are going to default. Municipalities are going to default. And certainly stocks are going to go a lot lower. So that means you have to pick only the safest debt instruments, the safest paper. And I think those issued by the governments of Singapore and Switzerland are probably the safest on Earth right now. And those issued by the U.S. government are somewhere a distant third, but they're the best ones you can get in this country. So I tell people, look, if you can't go overseas to invest, you want to be in U.S. Treasury-only money market fund. That's not even the bonds, but a money market fund.
U.S. Treasury money market funds.
Right. And there aren't many. There are only a dozen big ones in the country, and I list a half a dozen in the book that have no nuisance charges attached.
Now,
you treat it just like a bank account.
Well, but a government money market, is this invested then in government short-term government bonds or what?
Yeah, Treasury bills and also even long-term bonds as long as they're almost ready to expire. In other words, they may only have 90 days left on them. So that's all short-term Treasury debt.
And so you can go in and out just like you would with a bank account.
Well, yeah, you can deposit money in these things, you can write checks off it, you can wire money in and out, so it's almost as convenient as a checking account, although they have lower limits on the checks, you know, somewhere like $100. So you probably need a bank account for the smaller ones, and that's why I list the two safest banks in every state in the book.
All right, fine. Now, of course, if a bank closes, what happens to the things you have in their safety deposit vault? Can you get them out?
Well, in 1933, when Roosevelt closed the banks, he also told everybody, oh, by the way, we're going to confiscate all of your gold, and to that end, we have advised all of the bankers to have a government agent standing by when anyone comes in to open a safety deposit box for the first time. So anything's possible. I wouldn't want to predict that that's going to happen again, but we certainly saw from history that it could. So my answer is, yeah, if you have something you really want to be private, a bank safety deposit box is not necessarily the best place for it.
You mean that they would actually confiscate some of the things in our safety deposit box, or those things would be made public, the things that we might have there very privately we wouldn't want anybody to see?
Well, I'm not predicting that that's going to happen. All I'm saying is we had an example of that in 1933. It happened in the United States. It certainly happened in other countries around the world. So, you know, a word to the wise, keep anything you like in there that you wouldn't mind having a bank officer and a government agent look over if they decide to confiscate gold again.
All right, so we're really entering some very, very difficult times. Now, what about the availability of credit? And I noticed that we're reading just yesterday that a lot of our major utilities are going to have to borrow an awful lot of money to, you know, to begin to modernize the equipment that keeps our gas and our electricity and our water coming to us. But is credit going to be available in times like this, or are we going to find a shortage of credit as we did during the 1930s, which was really what precipitated that terrible, terrible time?
You're exactly right. It was a shortage of credit, not because credit wasn't available, but creditors, that is banks and other creditors, were not willing to part with their money. They didn't believe that the debtors could pay back. They didn't believe the economy would allow them to pay back. And yes, that's exactly what I think we face. It stems from what you said earlier, which is the psychological background, the perceptions of people. And in this case, it's the perceptions of creditors that are changing. They're going from being wildly optimistic, exuberant, and crazy to actually being conservative, worried, concerned, fearful with that money. And they want to protect it rather than throw it out into the marketplace.
Well, what's going to happen to Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac? And these are the government agencies that have been lending all this money to people who want to go out and buy houses at exorbitant prices. What's going to happen to people? Is the price of a property going to decrease? And if it decreases so that it's worth less than the loan on it, then are people going to just turn it over to these government agencies? What's going to happen there?
You know, it's almost anybody's guess, but one thing I can say for sure, when 67% of homeowners in the United States owe 70% on average on their homes, what it really means is that the banks own these homes. These people are in them and they're paying interest on them, but they don't own them outright. So when the value of the homes goes down and people begin to lose jobs, they're going to lose the houses. The banks are going to have to take them over to pay off the debt that's owed and to keep themselves liquid. And of course, as the prices fall, that becomes more and more difficult. In fact, just in Atlanta, which is near where I live, there's apparently a three-year backlog of million-dollar-plus homes available. So already they're having trouble selling real estate in some areas. I know we had a big boom this summer in many areas of the country, but I think that was like the blow-off that we had in stocks in the first quarter of 2000.
Then you think there's going to be a real estate bubble, just as we've had a stock market bubble?
Yeah, in fact, this may be premature, but I'm guessing that the real estate bubble has already popped. I think the equivalent to first quarter of 2000 in the stock market was probably this summer, 2002, in the real estate market. I think the top's already passed.
All right. So you think then that if people have a property that they want to sell, that they ought to just go ahead and get it, try to get whatever they can out of it at this time, and you'd be
Absolutely.
Able to buy it at a later time at a much lower price?
Yeah. I mean, my response to people who do have property they want to sell, this isn't people who are living in their homes and they love the house and they want to live there, but people who do have investment real estate or a house they need to get out of, my advice is hit the bid.
In other words, if it'll move, why sell it?
Listen, what happens to people in real estate is that they hang on to the old dreams of the peak price that has ever occurred on the house. So if that occurred a year ago or 3 months ago and they say, you know, I could have gotten X for it, they hold out for that. What happens is liquidity dries up. People stop buying the homes because they're too expensive and the sellers won't lower the price. So for a while, there aren't any homes sold and you notice more and more signs going up and fewer and fewer buyers. And then one day, somebody says, I just got a job. I live in Nebraska and I just got a job offer in Mississippi. I have to move. I have to sell my house or I'll be broke. I won't have a job. So they say, all right, I'm going to take whatever I can get. And that's when everybody else realizes, oh, my gosh, these houses are worth 35% less than we thought. And that's when the price changes. So if you're in that situation, you might as well be first and take 10% less than you think it was worth.
Rather than have to go down the line and take 20 or 30% less. And in Japan now, property is going for about 20 cents on what it was. Isn't that about right?
That's exactly right. It's down about 80%, I think, and more in some areas of Tokyo.
And, of course, wise people are over in Tokyo buying property 20 cents on the dollar. I wish we could take advantage of that.
We will. Just give us a few years here.
Well, of course, I'm talking about Tokyo, but right here.
I hate to tell you, but I think it's too early to buy that property.
You mean over in Tokyo?
Yeah, the bear market's not over yet. They face a crisis directly ahead. This banking crisis has been looming for 12 years. Now they're getting serious about it. And I think the worst is directly ahead, and you'll be able to buy it for 5 or 10 cents on the dollar at the bottom.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to take another break here. And, of course, this is the time when I have to tell our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we really depended upon those of you who listen to our programs who believe that we're going to bring you the news you're not going to get elsewhere and an appraisal of things and an understanding of things to prepare you for what lies ahead. And a lot of people out there say, oh, this could never happen. But I'll tell you, we're in for some very difficult times. We're going into a war now. Where's the money coming from the war? Where are we going to be able to get the money for all the government programs we have? And, countries go bankrupt just like people go bankrupt. And, ladies and gentlemen, I think we're in some very, very difficult times. I agree with our guest today. And you're probably not going to hear this on a lot of places. If you believe we have something important to say, if you believe we are really, in many respects, involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a financial and political and ideological battlefield, if you'd like to partner with us and help us to get the truth out across America, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARD. Join the Radio Liberty family. Help us do what we do. 5 hours every day and 2 hours on the weekend. And we're up to almost 50 outlets across America. We're starting a new station up in Seattle. We're stepping out in faith. We're hoping that you'll be with us for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month or more, as much as you can afford. We'll send you the 4 best tapes of the month, the monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do. Because, of course, if we don't get the American people informed, if this country doesn't turn back to God, why, I can assure you that God is going to turn his back on America. Our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, our website, radioliberty.com. Tell others about our programs, and don't get discouraged if they don't want to listen to you. They will down the line. They'll remember what you said, and that's all we can do. There is a spiritual blindness out there. Our job is to be the watchman on the wall, and it's up to other people to listen.
A book that will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Mr. Robert Prechter, and of course our telephone number is 464-8295, or out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And you're certainly not a bearer of very good news, are you? But that's all right. I agree with you totally, and that people who listen to our program, I think, are well aware of the wisdom of what you're saying. Now, one of the things that we hear is that, you know, that silver may have a run-up because the world supply of silver certainly seems to be very limited, that certainly the silver mines have closed. The silver we have now all comes from copper mining or other things, and we're going to have some real shortages a year and a half or 2 years from now. Is that a valid observation or not?
Well, all I can say is I've been hearing this for, I don't know, 15 years. Silver, despite the most aggressive bullish writings and salesmanship, I would say, from people who sell it, has gone absolutely nowhere for, let's see, 9 years when it actually bottomed at $3.50 an ounce. I mean, it's not much above that at this point. I would say, as I said before, silver and gold are real money. They're monetary metals, and that's a big plus. I think there are people who are betting against them as well. That could be a technical plus, and it could have a sharp jump at any time. But it's too early to say that the bear market is over. Once the deflation has run its course, and that'll happen sometime in the next 2 to 8 years, silver's going to be the buy of a lifetime. Do you know that it tripled in 2 years after it finally bottomed in December 1932? Now, that's really fast action. But also, you suffered a lot if you got in it early because you just sit there and sit there and sit there. I think the people who kept people in the precious metals since January 1980 have done them an amazing disservice because not... How many investments do you know that went down 90% in value while the dollar went down in value, too?
Well, of course, I can remember when James Dine told people to get out of gold back in 1980, and I thought, gee, he doesn't understand what's going on. Now I think James Dine is getting smarter and smarter.
And you know, Jim's an amazing guy. Do you ever talk to him?
I've heard him talk. I've never actually met him personally.
Yeah, you should get him on the show sometime. He gave his actually his sell for gold in 82, which was a little late, as he'll admit, but he was the guy who said that the gold price would eventually cross the Dow. It never quite did, but I think it got within about $10 of it. It was very, very close. And he's been bullish on stocks for much of the bull market, correctly so. So he's an interesting guy.
He really is. Well, of course, you know, there's a few people you learn to admire and respect. And, of course, I think the difficulty is right now for people, everybody wants to know how to make money. And my gut feeling is you shouldn't be worried about how you're going to make money. You should be worried about how you're going to survive and keep what you have. Would that be a fair assessment?
Oh, that is so true, because the whole focus of the manic speculation of the 80s and 90s was how can I make money, but not exactly that. It's how can I make money fast? You know, you didn't have that old, well, I've got a 15-year plan, I'm going to try a new manufacturing plant, and I'm going to set this up, you know, hire so many people. It was, how can I throw a lot of money over here in hopes that it goes up really quickly because somebody else is going to want to buy what I've bought and make it go up? That psychology, unfortunately, is not gone yet. You still see it every day in the papers. Oh, the market just made a bottom. Hang in there because your money's going to double and triple again. We're back in the bull market. Well, those days are gone, and you're right. The main focus now should be, how do I protect the money I have left, because that is my sweat. That is what I worked for all those years, and I've put it away. You need to hold on to it, because money is a distillation of effort. And when it disappears, it means all that effort you put into those little pieces of paper that were saving your energy are gone. You need those pieces of energy to help you live later on, so save them.
All right. Well, I had a very nice lady call me the other day, and she's apparently a school teacher. She has a lot of money, and one of these things that you push her, an annuity of some sort. And, and she's going to be able to get her money out of the annuity. And if she were to cash that in, why, it would cost her an awful lot of money. Would she be better to get her money out now or just leave it there?
Well, there are too many individual variables for me to answer that question for someone I don't know who's in an annuity I don't know about with an insurance company I don't know either. Now, I did list what one company believes are the safest insurance companies in the United States. So I think if you have contracts with them, you might as well have it with the best, because I think some insurance companies have way over-guaranteed things. They have guaranteed investment contracts where people are supposed to be getting a certain percentage of return every year. There's no way in the world they're going to be able to meet that with interest rates really low. And the way they try to do it is to buy junk bonds. That's a terrible idea. So, it depends on where it is. Personally, I don't have any of this type of investment, and I really wouldn't recommend it either. So if you're already in it, and you're 65 years old and the company is solid, I'd say leave it right where it is. If some of those things aren't true, then you need to investigate them and make a decision.
And do you think then that some of the insurance companies might even go down?
Absolutely.
And you think that some of the banks are going to go down? I mean, what's the effect of the derivative market on what's going on? We hear that, we've got, $40 or $50 billion in derivatives, and a lot of these banks are just overloaded with them. Is this going to have an impact? We know that long-term capital almost brought the whole market down here several years ago.
I think there are trillions of dollars in derivatives.
Right. I think somebody said 40 or 50 trillion, right?
Yeah. I think that's only in the United States. I think worldwide it's close to 100 trillion. Nobody really knows, because a lot of these contracts are secret. A lot of them are dependent, as we found out in Enron, they're dependent on the stock price holding up. So they can implode very easily. And unfortunately, when the banks do it, whose money are they doing it with? The depositors, your money. So I say, what's the point of having your money in a bank that's speculating wildly with it? You might as well put it in a very safe place, in a place where people aren't speculating with it. I don't see any reason why people should have their money in banks for an extra 0.5% that's taking a risk with your principal.
And what about, of course, a lot of people are going to say, well, I've got this certificate of deposit, and I'm getting the, 2% more with that. What happens, if a bank does go down? How safe is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation? Are they really going to get their money back?
Well, if only one or two or a handful of banks fail, and they're not huge, giant, massive ones, then yes, they're going to get their money back. But I think we have here a system-wide problem, and that means that when the system begins to crumble and a dozen banks go under, and three of them are the biggest we have, then those people won't get paid back. Now, think of it this way as well. Suppose you actually are going to get paid back. It takes a while for the FDIC and the government investigators to come in and figure out what happened and figure out who's supposed to get what. So your money is on hold for a while at minimum. And I still say, what's the point? Why not have your money in a safer bank? And listen to this. This is the kicker. If you put your money in the safer bank, those banks are likely to get only safer and safer, because other people will figure this out, and they'll begin to move their money from the unsafe banks to the safer banks. And that'll include the bank that you're in.
And, of course, you list all these safe banks in your book?
Well, I list the two safest, at least as of late last year, and according to a service that I really trust, in each state. And they also have ratings for safety. So some are rated A, some A+, and so on. And so you can pick, you don't even have to keep a bank in your state. You can just take the ones that they rate the safest in the entire country.
All right. Well, of course, if you don't have it there, would you just do send them the money, send a check, something like that? And
well, you know, you call them up and you open an account just like in any other bank. And there's nothing wrong with having a local account as well, as long as it's not your entire life savings. I think it's better to keep your savings in something that's much safer.
All right, fine. And, of course, your real recommendation would be in one of these money market funds that's invested in government bonds.
Yeah, treasury-only securities, that's exactly right. And short-term ones at that.
All right, fine. Well, we're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners today?
Take control of your own finances.
Okay.
You know, stop listening to all. I'm a talking head like everybody else when it comes to giving a market opinion, but I don't think I am when it comes to saying, you know what, you can't find safety information anywhere else on Wall Street. The money managers want you to keep the money with them. They go on TV all day. The brokers want you to keep the money with them. They go on TV all day. So if you want to take back control of your own finances, read this book, figure out how to do it yourself. Once it's safe, then you can look out from behind your bunker and say, well, you know, I might speculate over here. But while your money is tied up and those statements are coming in every month lower and lower and lower, you're just so demoralized you can't move. It's time to move so that you can think again.
All right. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. And why don't you get your website out just one more time?
That's ElliottWave.com, Elliott, two L's and two T's, wave like on the ocean, .com, Elliott Wave. And if you're going to look in a bookstore for my book, it's called Conquer the Crash.
Conquer the Crash. Okay, God bless you. Thanks so very much for being with us. Hope we
all
can
right.
get you on again here. And as we see this thing begin to unravel, and I fear we are going to begin to see it a further unravel.
Yep, and remember, if the market rallies for a month or two, it's an opportunity. It's a great opportunity to sell.
Okay, God bless, and thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I hate to bring you bad news, but I'm not being honest with you if I don't tell you what I think, and I certainly had a pretty good idea what our guest was going to say today, which is why when our regularly scheduled guest couldn't come, I agreed to have Mr. Prechter back with us from the Elliott Wave. That's his report that he regularly writes. Well, this is the time, of course, when I want to certainly remind you about the conference we're going to be putting on. It's going to be on the 23rd of November. That's a Saturday. It'll be all day long, and it'll be out at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. There'll be a luncheon. There will be a syllabus. We're going to bring in speakers, and we're going to talk to you about how you should prepare. And if you don't prepare now for the times that lie ahead, why, you're going to be like everybody else. You're going to have to be prepared financially, psychologically, and physically as well. If you are reading what the CIA is saying, it's saying if we go to war with Saddam Hussein, he may very well strike back at us with biological warfare. Now, there may be an attack. It may not come from Saddam Hussein, but is that really going to matter to you where it comes from if people are dying of some other form of neurological problem or some bacteriological viral disease? You need to be prepared, yourself and your family. Don't rely upon the government to look after you. And all you have to do is pick up the paper day after day after day. They're telling us there's going to be a biological attack. Why are they telling us that? What are they preparing us for? Why is FEMA making plans to set up relocation camps for literally millions of Americans? Maybe we're not quite as secure as we like to think we are. And so, of course, we ask you to pray for America. To pray for our country, to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Remember our telephone number, and if you're going to be coming to our meeting, give us a call right now, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Please tell others. We'd like to get a good crowd out, and I think it's important that people know what's going to be coming down the line and are going to be prepared for it. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
really interesting. I think that's the reason they were calling. So, is this a good program?